Welcome to episode number 72, Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast. This is all about Bassmaster Classic Week, previewing Lake Ray Roberts with a couple of locals, Coy Greathouse and Kevin Bryant, and they give us all kinds of inside information. So if you want to make any last-minute adjustments to your fantasy fishing team, or just some good inside nuggets that will help you better view, watch, consume the content of Bassmaster Classic Weekend. Hope you guys enjoy it. Until next time, helping you guys catch more bass and suck less. This week, the Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Arsenal Fishing. Arsenal Fishing offers premium custom-made performance apparel and tackle. Arsenal delivers a wide variety of custom-designed baits, accessories, and tools, along with unique utilitarian apparel for all outdoor enthusiasts. As part of their support, you can use code HELLEBASS15 to save 15% on all purchases at arsenalfishing.com to support the show. Now let's get back to helping you catch more bass and suck less. All right, here we are, another Wednesday night Hellebass Live. It's Bassmasters Classic Week, so let's get excited. Let's get the party started. Tonight is all about getting ready, getting hyped for the Bassmasters Classic, which starts Friday, bright and early. Today was their last official practice day. They get an off day, media day, tackle prep day tomorrow, and then fireworks begin Friday morning. So we got Coy Greathouse, who is one of my fellow fantasy fishing pundits. He's actually the top of the fantasy fishing pundits this year. What's up, Coy?
Hey, everybody. Man, glad to be here. Yeah, you know, it's hard being at the top, but we're going to tough
like
it
out.
It's
kind of like the best of the worst this year, though. Like, none of us are really, like, killing it.
Man, I was until this last tournament, I was in the 97th percentile, so I was doing pretty good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
And, you know, I would prefer to be in the top 1%, but I haven't done that in probably 5 years. So my second year ever, I was in the top 100. At the end of the year. And I think that may be the only reason I got invited to write for a bass. And it's been a grind every year since. It seems like when I don't get to look at all the pundit picks and make my selections based on that, I do worse. So all have a leg up.
Yeah, just a quick hey guys, let us know that Coy and I sound well. Let us know in the chats there. I think we do, but just to check. Yeah, I had like 1 year where I don't know, finished maybe, I think I ended like seventh at the end of the year or something crazy. I was top 10 in Tackle Warehouse, which pretty much means you're top 10 overall. And that was one amazing year. But I will say, like, when you have to make your picks 2 weeks ahead of time, it's a different scenario than waiting to the last minute and kind of, I don't know, there's different pressure and you got to, like, I feel like you have to like have a good reason and you got to write it up and like give something compelling. And then you make picks different. Cause you're like, well, I bet you the other four pundits will pick this guy. So I'm going to outsmart them and pick this guy. Right. And so you're like, it keeps you from going like too obvious sometimes. I don't know. It's weird. Like there's more traps when the pressure of being a pundit, I feel like.
Yeah. In fact, last year was my worst year. I was struggling to get into 80th percentile and, I worked my tail off, but I found about halfway through the season that if you're doing really well, make the most obvious picks that you can. Like, don't worry about dark horses. Don't worry about low percentage. Pick the guys that are shoe-ins to do good. And sometimes, like, I picked Scott Canterbury on Neely Henry, didn't go well. So sometimes that'll come back and bite you. But overall, I found that that's the best strategy for you late in the year if you're doing well.
Yeah. For sure. What's up, Roger? Good to see you. Roger's a big fantasy player. Yeah.
That guy, I have been talking to that guy on Facebook and everything else for years and years. So I think I was one of the co-founders of the Facebook group, the Fantasy Fishing Facebook group, nice. Way back when. It's probably 5 years ago. And Roger was one of the first people to jump into that group. So cool to see that name sticking around.
Yeah, so Ryan says he hoped this the classic doesn't screw up his fantasy season, so he must be doing all right. Like I'm just I don't know, I'm like I forget where I'm at now. Like it's like 80 percentile. Like I'm just barely mediocre. But still ahead of Ronnie Moore, so that's all that really matters. Yeah, so.
Well, really, Jim Sexton, 2 years ago, he blew the doors off of everybody. So, I mean, it just completely just wiped the floors with us. And so I'm glad that he's, you know, I don't like to say I'm glad anybody's struggling, but it's nice to be well ahead of Mr. Sexton. No offense if you're watching this at a later date.
What's up, Jay? What's up, Sycamore? Yeah, it's difficult to be consistent in fantasy fishing. Like you can put together a couple good tournaments, even a season, but to do 90 plus percentile, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in a row, that's a tough nut to crack. Just like it's tough to go out and like string 5 good derbies together in real life, right? Like that's quite a feat.
Yeah, I was my only blemish was the second. What was the second second lake or second tournament of the year? I can't remember.
So we went to St. John's and then we went to Tennessee River.
Yeah, that one bit me. All of the guys that were shoe-ins on that one did not. They all struggled. I don't understand that one. But
well, you thought that was a bad tournament until Gunnersville. And then that one looks like a good one now.
Yeah, well, 7:45. I guess I was second to last, but actually I was ahead of most of you until the last day. For whatever reason, the way that everybody kind of repositioned in the standings and they handed out all the big bass and the big bag bonuses and stuff like that. And that really knocked me down in the standings. So, you know, it was bad. It was real bad.
Yeah, Ryan says he's yeah, top 100. So that's right where you want to be with 3 derbies to go.
Yeah. Do we have anybody in the chat who's actually won anything? Prizes? Probably some Beat Hellebass guys.
See anybody that's won my group, unless they go by a different name.
I'm asking them to sound off and brag a little bit. Yeah, for sure. Like,
I mean, if they probably have all beat me several times this season, whether they've actually won the prize or not.
I'm pretty sure Ryan Crowley and I have been in the top end several years ago. Ryan, if you remember, I don't know if you remember me, and I may be misspeaking, but I'm just looking through the names here, and there's been some guys that have been around for a long time. I mean, this fantasy fishing thing really blew up almost a decade ago.
Sure.
And so we've got a lot of years under our belt at this point.
I guess before we get too far, I want to thank Arsenal Fishing for supporting the channel and the stream. Got to shout them out every week. Get tired of the business. Hellebass15 at arsenalfishing.com. I'll put the banner up a little later so you guys have the code. But, you know, if you want to support the show, get some cool fishing stuff, some good apparel, some good sun hoodies to protect yourself. Check them out and save some money, and everybody wins. Roger said he won $180 in the Big Blue Bassmasters group last year in Kentucky. So there you go.
Nice. Well done.
So got Koi on for a couple reasons. One, it's been a while, a little over. I think we talk right before last year's Bassmasters Classic, which would have been, right when they announced it. I don't remember when that was. We talked like the week after Ray Roberts was announced. And that was sometime during last year's crazy goofed up Bassmaster Elite Series schedule. So one, we wanted to have Koi back on because he's a fantasy fishing pundit. But the main reason this week is because he at least normally or has lived right down the road from Ray Roberts in the past and has fished it quite a bit. So Koi's on to give us a little extra insight about Ray Roberts. Maybe give us some nuggets of what he thinks about. I think there's some high water down there, what he's heard, what he's seen this year. And then just maybe there may be a special guest joining us to be determined if he gets off the plane and gets his bags and gets to his hotel. So there could be a special guest. We won't spoil it. We'll see if he shows up before we before we get into too much details.
Yeah, you're making him sound like way too much of a celebrity, but we don't want his head to get too big here. But no, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I think last time we actually did, I want to say it was the Chickamauga fantasy, and they canceled that event like the day after we did our podcast. And so we were all excited, had a great show. I talked about the only lure worth talking about, which it'll come up again here in a little bit. And it never happened. The whole tournament never happened until later in the fall anyway. So I don't think they're going to cancel the Classic before Friday. I would hope
Seems unlikely so at this point.
Should be good. Should be solid.
Yep. Thomas brings up a good point. It'll be interesting to see, and I don't know what's all coming around, but there's usually several cool things that come out at the Classic. And he's hinting at that. Yeah, the marketing release of Hummingbirds Live wasn't like, at least the images they shared in their video weren't like amazing. Like they would seem pretty par at best.
Yeah.
I guess they'll see when they actually get the units and what they look like. But I think either way, I mean, I wasn't like wowed by the images. I also wasn't disappointed after being in a boat that has like Garmin LiveScope. I felt like it was similar. But I think a lot of us are hoping to be like, oh, this is going to be like way better. But the fact that I can hook it up with my already existing Hummingbird units and not have to go out and get a off-brand unit and it can all be networked, you know, that's kind of exciting for me as a guy that runs Hummingbirds already.
Yeah. Well, it's not shocking that, you know, everybody's catching up to that technology. And you know, there's been a lot of talks about the shakeup of, you know, how are these guys going to land their sponsors and deal with all the ins and outs of having multiples? Are they even going to keep sponsors for their graphs? Are they going to just go out and buy their own stuff? Or you know, all these companies going to actually sponsor? Like, you're going to have a Garmin and a Hummingbird sponsor? I mean, there's a lot up in there, but you know, the whole time I'm just thinking it's gonna level out at some point. Somebody's gonna have something slightly better than somebody else's stuff, but it'll all kind of balance out in the end. So I'm glad to see they're at least coming to the table with something.
Yeah. What's up, Will? Yeah, it'll make a lot of people's lives easier. But I also think they're officially gonna announce the Rapala DT8 this week, which I'm kind of excited about. Leaked it on his Instagram. I don't think he was supposed to, but pretty sure that's coming out. I don't think we have to wait till ICAST. I don't know. Is there any other products you've heard about? I have not really been like super in the loop, but it would be interesting to see what comes out.
That's more than I've heard of as far as products go. But I've always enjoyed going to Classic. Are you gonna? I don't guess you're gonna get a chance to even come down there, are you?
No. Are you gonna be in there or hanging out?
Yeah, man. We're heading out on Friday. We're gonna be. We're going to the Classic on Saturday, and then I'm going to be on the water with Kevin and another buddy of mine on Sunday for about half the day before we go back to the Classic. So nice. I love the Classic. I went to one at Grand Lake, which is about 5.5 hours from Dallas, and it was amazing. It's an unbelievable experience, and I'd recommend to anybody that can get out there and go to it.
Yeah. I have this fantasy that I'm going to make it there by fishing.
Well, no, not laughing at you because I don't think you're capable of it. But I you know, it's not a fancy. You can do it, man. Let's go.
I was ahead of all three guys that made it the first day.
Oh, really?
I just didn't back it up on day two.
You're going through the nation, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that's a tough road. That's a real tough road. I guess it's not as tough as fishing against 300 people in the opens, but maybe it is.
Yeah, I think you could argue. There's different arguments both ways for that. Well, they pretty much almost do now, right? They got the 8 comes out. They got a 6, an 8, a 10, a 14, a 16, and a 20. So
that mid depth has always been kind of a mystery for everybody. So
yeah, so it sounds like this. Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, I think the eight is going to be a great addition to it. And those baits just, they flat out catch them. I'm excited to see it. You might even see them at the class.
You're going to get the body of a 6 that dives almost as deep as a 10 in that small profile. So I think that'll be a fish catcher for sure. And, you know, speaking of what, I mean, the DT6 was a large part of Randy Howell's Classic win, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. The way that Ray Roberts fishes, that I really don't think you're going to get any deeper than that. I'm not trying to get ahead, but you might see some of those baits really make a pretty big statement. It would not surprise me.
So maybe I give it up to the chat here. Do you guys want to start? Let's say three avenues we can take. We can just talk about general classic fanfare, why the classic is cool, why we should be exciting. Two, we can get into how Coy thinks this classic's going to set up, how it could be won, how we think Ray Roberts is going to fish. Or three, we could talk in-depth fantasy fishing. So let us know in the chat where you want to go with that. And we'll start. We'll get to them all. We might want to like put off how it will fish until potentially our special guest arrives, but I don't know that we can bank on that either. So,
yeah, I would say let's do that one next, at least second, because special guest has fished it recently, and he's got a pretty good finger on the pulse of what's going on. I know a lot about the lake this time of year, but he's got some very recent knowledge and he's unbelievably connected, and I can't wait to hear what he's gonna bring to the table, assuming he can make it. But let's start somewhere else and we'll get to that in a minute.
Cool. Let's maybe dwell now. How many classics have you been to?
It's gonna be my second classic.
Okay. And so the other one was which one? Which was the other one?
It was Grand Lake 2016, I think. No, 2015.
So that was Cliff Pace.
That was Edwin Evers.
Edwin Evers. Okay, that's when he had that crazy big bag to lap Jason Christie. Yeah. Okay.
So it was unbelievable. I've never heard a bunch of bass fishermen get more excited than in that room whenever Dave Mercer said 29 pounds 11 ounces or whatever it was. Sure. It was insane. 27 11. No, it was 29. It was big. And actually, I started that morning following him on the water, and I left him about 30 minutes into it, right before he caught his first big one. And I went over and watched Bill Lowen, and Bill Lowen caught a bunch of little ones, which was – it was fun to watch him flip a tube, but it was – I should have stayed with the old Edwin Evers.
All right. So what do you think makes – like, go into more depth why you think the Classic is such a great event to attend. And what did you experience in your first Classic, and what are you hoping to see in this Classic?
So last time I was more or less by myself. I had my in-laws with me, but they don't, you know, they enjoy bass fishing, but they're not really into it. But I did some walking around, talked to some pros. If I'm ever going to fish at that level, I've got to get over this, but I'm definitely, I've been watching these guys. This was before MLF and all that stuff. I mean, these are the names that I grew up watching, and they're all in the, I mean, they were in their prime at that point, a lot of these guys. And so I was pretty starstruck talking to these guys.
Sure.
It was kind of hard, but it actually let me realize that they're normal guys. So I got to talk to, actually Scott Martin, who was an FLW tour guy. He was not a bass guy, but I got to talk to him for a while. Talked to Hank Cherry, talked to, let's see who else, talked to Brandon Palahniuk, talked to Jason Williamson, Ish Monroe. I mean, a bunch of guys that I have only ever seen on TV. It was really an amazing opportunity to pick their brains and to get to know just kind of how they process information. But then on top of that, I got a picture with Tommy Sanders and Mark Zona, which was awesome. Mark Zona is a lot bigger than he looks, and Tommy Sanders is a lot smaller than he looks. So I thought that was interesting. But seeing all the baits, and there's big tanks, and there's expos, and there's talks. It was a ton of information. It was a lot of fun, and the weigh-ins they're amazing. Outside of the dog, all the dog jumping things, I didn't get behind that. But they have not given that up.
That's the bummer, is like, if you want to get a decent seat, you got to show up and watch all that stuff. Cause if you try to come in just for the weigh-in, you're going to probably not get in or be standing room only somewhere.
Yep. Yep. The dogs jumping is, that's the highlight.
And like the Hank Parker's cast for $10,000 and like all that stuff that happens before.
Never seen anybody make it.
Yeah, and I think pretty good sales, right? Like, I think if you're shopping for deals, rods, reels, tackle, like, they tend to really, I mean, I've never been, but talking to guys that I know that pretty much go to Classic every year, they like, there's always some crazy good deals on something at the Classic Expo.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's tons and tons of booths. And so you just got to take your time and go through it. When I was there, it was the BOK Convention Center, which is enormous. Mm-hmm. And there were just, there was room after room after room of just nothing but tables and booths. And you can't see it all. So go in with a plan, see, you know, go to, there's a lot of guys that didn't make the Classic. Go and, you know, tell them you're grateful for them being there and pick their brains for a little bit. And then anybody who generally, if you don't make day three, then a lot of those guys are going to come in and you'll get to walk around with them, you know, go and say hi to them, but you're not gonna be able to see it all. So
here's what not to do. Don't go up to Gerald Swindle and ask him, how did he do today? Or why are you not fishing? Or
yeah. I actually, I made an error one time talking to David Walker. I saw him at Gunnersville. I was actually fishing a tournament, and mm-hmm. I walked up to him, and all I could think to say was, "Hey, congratulations on making the Classic." And he didn't make it that year.
Yeah.
So that was sort of a shot in the old well, undercarriage.
If it makes you feel any better, Ken Duke, who's the know-all, be-all bass fishing, asked Lee Livesey on live Bass Talk Live what he thought on fishing the Classic, even though he didn't qualify this year. So
that was painful because that's home lake. That's
he's from Texas, but yeah, he asked him on Bass Talk Live, basically, you know, how are you going to approach the Classic? And he's like, I'm going to be working the expo.
Oh no, that's a shot, man. God, that's painful. I'm sure he took it in stride, but he was hurting inside.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, to some degree, it's a little bit of an honor to think, you know, you think highly enough somebody that they're like, oh, well, he's a good enough fisherman. He made it for sure, right? Like, so, I mean, it could be kind of a compliment in some regards, but.
Yeah, he wants nothing more than to be there. So, yeah. I'm decent friends with Lee, and it was a hard deal for him not to get to this one, but it's going to fire him up for the next one. I'm sure he'll be a factor at Hartwell next year.
And he's there because he won Bass Fest or Texas Fest or whatever they call it. And that one does come with an automatic berth.
I don't think Lake Fork was Texas Fest this year. I think it was just Lake Fork because I actually wrote that in my article and Kyle edited it out.
Oh, maybe.
I thought it was Texas Fest, but I don't think it was. So I don't know that he's off, but he's fighting for it.
Sure. So what would you say if you're within X amount of hours and you're a bass fanatic, you should go there this weekend? What do you say is the no brainer drive to check out the convention and the one day away in at least?
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, if you're in the continental U.S., I would try to go. It's really that cool. Man, if you're a diehard fishing fan, it's hard to justify, you know, if there's any distance to keep you from going, it's hard to put a number to that. I mean, maybe if you live in California, because it's dead center of the country right now. So,
but you've only been to two, so you skipped the last – five, so that doesn't seem like a good rationale. I'll just go ahead and call you out on
that. While that's fair, you know, there's certain things obviously that can keep you from going outside of your distance to the
That's what I'm saying. Like, so if you're like 4 or 5 hours away, like you can do a day trip and it's probably worth it, right? Like, whereas like you couldn't make it to Gunnersville last year and just check it out for a day. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, I think if you're 3, 4, 5 hours from Dallas, I think it's worth making the trip for a day, day and a half and experiencing it. Like, obviously it's worth it going from anywhere, but like, I think if you're that close, do yourself a favor and make it a priority.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually drove, I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan and I'm going to own that. I'm a bass fan forever. And I drove down for Lee Livesey's weigh-in from – I'm in Oklahoma right now working on a project. And I drove to the weigh-in and made it right before everybody started weighing in to watch him win on Lake Fork. And that was about a 3-hour drive from here.
Which is probably like literally the worst weigh-in to go to because you actually knew the results. And he only brought That's in true. One fish. But like he was a buddy, so you wanted to be there and like be part of the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to shake his hand, congratulate him after we were all done. And even those are great to go to because a bunch of those guys stick around. Brandon Pownock's mm-hmm. always there. I mean, they were walking around chatting with everybody. So are you hearing a ding every time that comes on?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out how to get that to shut off. I thought I figured it out, but I don't.
I thought that was like every time I got a new subscriber or something like that.
Oh, well, maybe, yeah. That's what we can tell everybody.
Nice. So, yeah, John, good question. Do the MLF guys go to the Classic or even work it? I think it's a really case-by-case basis. So some guys have sponsor obligations, and I think you will see some of them there. There are definitely a contingency of them that probably wouldn't be caught dead there. and then there's a bunch of them in the middle. And they just finished today on Chickamauga, right? So – I'll be interested to see who shows up and who doesn't. I think there'll be plenty of talk and scuttlebutt and social media about who gets seen and who doesn't get seen at the Classic this year.
It'll be interesting, certainly. We don't need to get too deep into all that, but it's definitely there's some. I know there's some animosity out there between some guys.
For sure.
We'll just leave it at
that. I'm pretty sure you won't see Kevin. You won't see Boyd Duckett. You won't see Gary Klein. There's probably a few others. But I would expect Ike will be there. I mean, he's not an active MLF guy, but I would imagine he's going to be at the Classic.
I think guys like that are just – they're just fans of the sport. And
they just – he's going to be there working with Plano – or, not Plano Flambeau and Berkeley and Rapla and Basscat, yep. And he'll have his 1-hour sessions in all those booths making the rounds, and that's just part of what he does. So
absolutely, yeah, I think I figured out the ding. We should be good now. We'll see if it dings again, then I'll just wear a cone of shame. I don't know.
It's not too bad. I think, and it really depends. And I think, some of them you may, there's a few of them that are fishing the opens, and I would imagine they're going to probably make their way to the Bassmaster Classic to work. And there'll be some others that have no interest. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So you're going to go down, you're driving down Friday. So you'll basically be in the car watching Bass Live on the way down, or are you going to get up super early and be there like for takeoff?
I'm going to have the kids and my family with me, so can't make it to take off on Saturday, but we're going to try to do that for Sunday for sure. It's one of those things. I have four boys and they're 9 and under, and there's nothing more special than to take a kid out there to the Classics. They can see all the energy behind this sport. Mm-hmm. I've talked to people that don't even know that there's professional bass fishing, which is, it's really a shame. And there's so much to this sport, that if you're outside of this bubble, I'll just say it how it is. There's a bubble around our sport that's not very big. We're not an NFL, we're not a PGA, mm-hmm. But there's so much energy whenever you get in these places. It's such a culture that's, and when you put it all together, it's so energetic. It's really incredible. So I'm bringing my boys. I'm pumped up, and we're going to spend every second we can out there.
Yeah, awesome.
Dude, I look like Vincent. Yo, you're not the – you didn't throw that one up there. You may not want to.
I will. I hope I was going to. Well, do you have both your ears? Doesn't he the one that cut his ear off?
I do have both my ears. So
I think
far.
Van Gogh is a famous painter who actually cut one of his own ears off. I'm not like up on my, but I believe that's Van Gogh.
I actually did one of those face apps a long time ago. Who do you look like? And it actually, there was a statue. There was some statue, and it could have been Van Gogh. I'll have to go back and find that picture because. It was ironic. That'd be crazy. I've never been told I look like Van Gogh, but I'll take it. He's famous.
There's only one thing that we can really do at this point.
Yeah.
Yep. Do a Google image search of Vincent Van Gogh.
Oh gosh. Here we go. Well, let's try it. I'm curious.
There you go.
Oh man. I mean, I can kind of see it. I had a lot more beard until about 2 weeks ago.
I'm pretty sure that's the bandage over the ear.
I mean, I can kind of see it. I do have a red beard. I don't have red hair.
Do you have a hat like that?
I have no pseudo cowboy hats. Right. You know, I'm sure he was popular with the ladies, so I'll take it.
Nice. All right. There we go. All right. Let's got a few more questions that came in here.
Seen a couple about Cody Bird, but yeah, we'll get to those again.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, that is true. Dobbins is not going to the expo. Short of that story is Gary felt he didn't get a great booth position one time in a bad place at a different expo. Didn't feel that Bass wanted to work with him on it. So his stance was he didn't want to be part of the expo. So I'm sure it was probably, I don't know. There was a difference of opinion, I guess. So, and their place is in Sulphur Springs, I think. So if you're down that way, you're in a Dobbins fan, swing by the shop. They're pretty accommodating. So,
yeah, I've actually talked to the whole Dobbins crew a handful of times, and they're good folks. We were going to work on getting some Dobbins rods and some high schoolers' hands in the Dallas area, and they were very, very accommodating to that. So Gary is a good dude.
And I'm sure they'll have dealers there that will be selling their rods. So,
oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we don't need to get into like Ray Robertson detail, but do you know, does Cody Bird fish there much? Has he fished Ray Bob much? Is he?
Cody Bird is not, I don't think that he would call himself necessarily a Ray Bob expert. He is Grand Lake is like, that's his home waters. I mean, that's his jam. He does live around the Metroplex. He's fished Fork a bunch. He's fished, he's fished a lot of the local lakes. I'm sure he's fished Ray Roberts, but he doesn't fish any local tournament trails. He's an opens guy.
Sure.
So sure. They don't, the opens don't ever come to these lakes. So
right.
As far as him being a local or being like a shoe-in to do well on this lake, I don't know that I would count him out, but I would say that he doesn't have a ton of experience there. He has experience in these lakes around here, which we can get into how they fish in a minute. But they're a beast of their own, certainly.
Yeah. Let's maybe should we roll into fantasy fishing a little bit?
Yeah, we can do that.
Because I definitely put Cody on my Drain the Lake roster.
Absolutely. Yep.
That was seemed like a really good value for a person that's only going to fish one tournament and use him on Drain the Lake.
Absolutely. Are we going to start with Drain the Lake and then fantasy first?
Yeah, I'm going to pull up. So people may not like this. This might be a little taboo here, but I'm gonna share the pundits group, the private group standings.
Why not?
So
I'm on top.
This is a little sneak peek. Koi's like, whatever, dude. Dad, go ahead, show him. I don't care. let me zoom in on that a little bit. There we go. So this is our. There's six of us in here, but there's only four of us that actually write an article, right?
Four pundits, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm the worst of the people that actually write articles. So Koi's at top. Kyle Jesse, who's our what do we call him? We call him the commissioner, right?
Yeah.
And then Pete Robbins, who's been a guest on the show in the past. Koi's been a guest in the past. I meant to have Kyle on. I guess that's I need to have him on.
Did you ever have old TA on?
I was going to, but he's busy doing other stuff now. But
yeah,
I should have him on just in general, not necessarily talk fancy fishing, but I think he'd be a good guest in general.
Oh yeah.
And then Ronnie, who was trash talking the heck out of me up until he fell behind, and I beat him 3 weeks in a row. So,
yeah, I think he's, you know, he's got a safe face. He's doing all his
He's like, oh, I'm so busy. I got all this and that and this.
Yeah, he's got too much going on. So he definitely, and I think that he, you know, he'll say his picks on a live television on Fox Sports. And so when you do that, and then you revert to something else, that you'll get called out for that. I would imagine. But
yeah,
anytime I can beat Ronnie, I'm giddy. So
all right. So why don't you tell us about your Drain the Lake? So definitely. Sycamore, I see your question. We're going to get to that next. We're going to talk fantasy fishing, and then we're going to do deep dive on how we think Ray Roberts is going to be caught, and presentations and type of water and depths and all that kind of stuff. So we'll talk fantasy fishing. We'll probably bleed into some of that, but then we'll go deep dive, and hopefully Kevin will be able to join by then. So what was your strategy for Drain the – I mean, overall, like, what did you do when the game was announced? Did you like map out all, I forget how many we had, 6 or 7 events left at that time? Like, what was your approach to Drain the Lake once you read the rules and the game?
Man, I started with looking at all those because you can only use them one time. So I made sure to pick guys in certain places that I felt were shoe-ins to get in. And some, there's only so many of those that fit that category. So you got to get outside the box a little bit, but I smashed the first one. I was in 99.7 percentile or something like that. Did really, really well. And now I'm in the 88th percentile. So the last 2 or 3 events, or however many we've had since the first one, I've done really, really bad. So, right now I've saved pretty much all of my smallmouth guys mm-hmm. for the next 2 events. And really the next one will be a mix of smallmouth and largemouth, Champlain, but it's Champlain, right? Yeah. Okay. So
yep. Champlain, then SLR. Yep.
That one will have some of both. And, I'm saving a lot of those Canadians, and I have not used Seth Fighter yet, which might come back to bite me. I'm even saving Austin Felix and mm-hmm. I mean, some of those guys are going to be on my roster come the next 2 tournaments. Brandon Palahniuk, even Chris Zaldane, could have picked him 10 times over, but saving him. So
yeah, I think I think I picked Zaldane for this tournament.
He's close. And I know that he has before the off limits period, which I assume was, I mean, before they announced it, I talked to several pros and they were already they knew it was going to be in Texas. Something had leaked out. And so they were fishing all the lakes that made sense, which there's really only 2 in the Metroplex. It's Ray Roberts and there's Possum Kingdom, which is west of the Metroplex. And Possum Kingdom is pretty small.
Not Lewisville?
No. Believe it or not, you guys picked – I mean, y'all saw Lewisville at its worst.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, size-wise, that would have – could have been geographically could have been a good location, right?
Thought about that. And, you know, I know a couple people who were kind of in on the planning in the Dallas area because it's a big show. And those guys were telling me that Lewisville was just not, it didn't have the facilities to launch the giant. I mean, they do the opens, but
not with the fanfare that they wanted, I guess.
Maybe so. Ray Roberts is very rural. There's not a whole lot up there. So we're launching at Isle de Bois, which is a state park. It's a huge, there's just a massive parking lot, can host a ton of people and it's right on the water. It'll be perfect. So, but anyway, I forget the question. What was the question?
Yeah. We were talking about Drain the Lake and I mentioned I picked Zaldane. So I'm going to share my screen here for a second again. Because I haven't shown this, but I actually built a spreadsheet when the game came out. Nice. And listed all the anglers out and just kind of did some quick like filters. And then I went down and I like picked 2 I was going to pick for each one of them, make sure I had my 8 and did that. So, I mean, I don't know if you did that to that detail, but that's generally what I did to see who I was going to save and when I was going to use them. And I've made very few tweaks I made a few, but for the most part, I've pretty much stuck to how I laid it out from the beginning.
Nice. I wasn't quite that detailed, but
I wanted to get this done a little quicker. I actually was hoping to build like a template in a Google Sheet that I could like give away to my viewers, but I just didn't have time to like pull it together. I thought that would be like a cool giveaway for people that wanted to sign up through my channel or join my group. So
that would have been awesome. Yeah, I wasn't quite that detailed. I'm in the middle of this project, didn't have a ton of time. I'm Ronnie Morin right now, so we'll move on. But I had it in my mind where I wanted people to go, and I knew that I wanted to save my smallmouth guys for later in the season. But there were a couple of things that just absolutely whooped me. Neely Henry was the big one, where there were so many guys that should have done really well, and I've burned them now, and I'm really sad about it. So as like Scott Canterbury, I should have saved him, but I didn't. And he bombed Neely Henry.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't use him there, though, I mean, I guess if you didn't use him there, you would have used him on what?
Gunnersville? Yeah.
And he wasn't great on Gunnersville either. I mean, he was better, but
he cashed a check. I mean, he was third day.
It was much better, but it wasn't like a top 20, I don't think, was it?
No, but it would have got me a heck of a lot more points than he did on the other. So it would have been so much better. I was below the average fantasy fishing score in Drain the Lake for that tournament. So that's bad because you've got eight guys instead of five.
So you had 1551. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I only had 1338.
Oh, really? On Neely Henry? Wow.
Yeah. No, wait. Sorry, never mind. It's not sorted by. You had 1204. Yeah. I had 1338. Actually, Jim Sexton is doing quite well at Drain the Lake.
Yes, he is. Yeah, but to go from 2182 on Fork to 1204, and I guess it was Gunnersville is where I got my teeth kicked in. I thought it was Neely Henry, but it was Gunnersville. Who did I have? Am I thinking wrong? I forget you can go back and look at this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not even showing me. I guess I got to go click on all these buttons. Steve Kennedy, he killed me. Chad Morgan Taylor, how in the world did he and John Cox? Of course, I'll tell you what, a lot of people talking about fantasy fishing. John Cox
showed up with no practice.
He showed up to the Bassmaster Classic. I don't know how you do that, but he did. And a lot of people are going to pick him, and he's either going to win the thing or he's going to come in dead last. That guy fishes. I can't ever pick him on fantasy fishing ever again because he just I don't know. He's so spread thin. But Derek Hudnall hurt me on that one. Frank Talley, Mark Menendez. Mark Menendez actually started off pretty strong in that one, the last tournament in Gunnersville. And
sure. Well, his day two was really good, and then he fell off on day three.
I'm looking at Neely Henry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So who do you got on the Classic? Who do your sneaky picks for the Classic?
Sneaky picks for the Classic. Let me go back to it. Hold on just a second. So obviously I'm picking Cody Bird. He is easily one of the most practiced North Texas fishermen that you're going to see. He knows rocky impoundments and he likes them to be a little bit off color. That's why he's so good on Grand. Dude loves he loves to throw a spinner bait, a chatter bait, crank bait, all those things. Square bill. Yeah. Those things play right into his wheelhouse. And he's a solid pick there. So 52%. I don't know how they do the percentages because it doesn't equal out to 100%. Obviously, whenever you're looking at the ownership,
I think those percentages carry over from the other buckets. I'm guessing.
I would imagine so. But yeah, he's a great pick no matter what the ownership percentage is. So, but he's bucket A. So there's a lot of other stakes over in bucket A that he's up against. But Luke Palmer is, man, I was this close to picking him on Gunnersville, and he did really well there. He has done
I used Palmer up on Gunnersville.
Yeah, that was a good move. I have not followed him close enough. He's just had an absolutely stellar year. The last several tournaments, he's been so close, made a lot of top end finishes, some top tens, if I remember right. But he's I just think he's on a tear right now. He'll do really well.
He's basically Todd Faircloth without a win yet.
Yeah, well, Todd Faircloth didn't get his first win till Mississippi River, maybe 2012 or 13, and that was a long time after he started. I mean, it was he'd been fishing for a long time without a win prior to that. Pat Schlopper is somebody I've got in here. Truth be told, it's more because I think he's just a good fisherman. I just think he's a really stout fisherman, and I couldn't find anybody else to really fill that spot that I didn't want to use elsewhere. I could have picked Hank Cherry. I really thought about Hank Cherry hard, but I think Pat Schlapper is. I don't know, he's a nation guy, and he might get a little spun out in the classic, but he may be just a Cinderella story. I just want him to. I want him to do well. He's had a rough start, but
he beat me twice last year. If that makes you feel better,
yeah. But
he beat me at the regional and the nationals, so.
So that means he's really, really good then. So, no, he's fantastic. Drew Cook's another one of those guys that's sort of sneaky. He's not really sneaky good, but he's had some – everybody knows he's good. He's had a couple rough events this year, but he is just a really, really good shallow water fisherman, and he's super even keeled. And I expect him to show up. If you haven't noticed, looking at my list here, I've got a lot of shallow water guys, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Bill Lowen is another one of those guys, shallow water. He's okay with 4, 5, 6 bites in a day, and the ones that he gets are going to be big bites, I would imagine.
Nice.
Hunter Shryock, another shallow water guy. I've been rooting for Hunter Shryock for a long time, and he's actually had a pretty good year. Surprisingly good year. Last year was really terrible for him, but he's had an above average year for his career so far with the Elite Series. And Patrick Walters, I've got him in there at the moment. He's the only one that I might swap out because I might want to save him for St. Lawrence River. And there, I know, but last time there at St. Lawrence River, it was a live scope tournament. And they were just out there scanning the flats out there in the middle of the river, looking for big smallmouth swimming around. And that's something obviously he's really good
at. That was more on the lake, and the lake's not in play this year.
Oh, well, then I've got him here, so I can't use him later. But if I leave him in, I don't guess I realize that. Well done for being up to speed on the lake limits there. Last one's Brandon Lester. And I really like Brandon Lester for his shallow water game, actually, not deep water stuff, which really he's a smallmouth guy. He loves to fish deep, drop shot, and all that stuff, which I kind of have him in there as a switch hitter. I mean, he might go up shallow and throw a crankbait, and he might go out and throw a drop shot in 37 foot of water. And I think you could catch fish doing both things.
Nice.
So there's my Drain Lake lineup. I will say that there's a lot of guys that I didn't pick that I wish that I could have picked for this one.
Sure.
Because I already picked them.
Yeah. So I went Bird. That's a same. I got Walters. I think I guess the other place I would have used Walters would have been Fork, and that was actually a good place not to use him. He actually did, I would say, underperformed. I mean, it wasn't a bad tournament, but he definitely underperformed. Stetson Blaylock. I feel like he's a good offshore angler, post spawn angler. Keith Carson, I kind of got a sneaky feeling that he's just a natural, and I think with the water being up, there might be something for him to find there. Clark Wentland, just a Texas guy. Same reason I picked Cody Bird mostly. Did you use Clark Wentland somewhere else in the season?
Yeah, I did a couple tournaments ago, and he did really bad.
I put Jake Whitaker in. Because I just feel like he's kind of a safe pick. I feel like he's gonna catch 10 fish, right? So I feel like he's gonna get me some points. We'll see. Maybe not. Zaldane.
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah, oh, real quick on Whitaker, he's gonna fish the marina. if they let him fish the marina, which I can't imagine they won't because they're not launching out of there. The marina is it holds some monster fish, and there's only one. There's not that many slips, but there's I bet there's 30 or 40 bass in there that are 4 pounds or better that nice. You could catch in a given
It'll be like weekend. A repeat of last year's Chickamauga, you think?
Would be. He likes docks, so nice. Slips.
Sounds like my kind of guy. Zaldane, we talked about for obvious reasons. And then I got Brian New on both my rosters, actually. Even with the broken hand or sprained hand or whatever it is, he's been out fishing. He's caught a few fish on practice. Won his first ever Bassmaster Open. Won his first ever Elite Series. This is his first Classic.
Yeah, he was on my roster until yesterday, and then he came off.
Injury or other reasons?
The injury was a big deal, but he's human. So this is his first Classic. Classic's a big deal, and I can see him spinning a little bit. But he is a John Cox – I don't know, he's a Brian Thrift protege.
Yep.
And the run and gun, hit one spot, catch one fish, that could play. You've really got two options on Ray Roberts, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I think the run and gun thing might play. It depends on how spread out the fish get.
And he kind of did that on Louisville, not saying there's the same fishery, but there's got to be a few parallels between those lakes.
Yeah, there are. There's a ton more timber in Ray Roberts. That's about the biggest difference.
For sure. All right. So I just got a text suggesting that our special guest is getting close to his hotel. So why don't we talk about your buckets?
I'm much more comfortable with those. Honestly, this tournament is really hard for me for Drain the Lake because I used so many guys. So I had to kind of pull from guys I had left. And guys that I didn't want to burn on smallmouth or didn't use on smallmouth fisheries. So I'm a lot more confident on my fantasy fishing buckets. So,
yeah. So who did you pull? Or I guess Leah wants to know, who did you put in for New?
Brian New's in bucket D, right? Yeah. So swept.
Okay.
You what?
Oh, I didn't know if it was the Drain Lake or in the regular bucket that you swapped them. Go ahead.
I swapped him out on fantasy buckets. I didn't have him for
so bucket D. You took out New and put in.
I put in Matt Airy, and that's okay. kind of a gut pick. But he loves
like,
fish and
they're shallow. Like buddies. So you yanked one buddy for another buddy.
Yeah. Well, he is a guy that's going to hunker down in a spot and fish every single thing in it. Mm-hmm. He's going to catch every fish, and again, not to dig too much into Ray Roberts yet, but there's just not that many fish there. But if you catch one, you got a really good shot at being 4, 5, 6, 7 pounds. I mean, there's just some massive bass in that lake. So I would not be surprised at all if he is able to put that shallow water thing together. And it's hard to talk about these buckets without going too much into what's going on in the lake, but Brandon Palahniuk, let's jump back to bucket A. I cannot pick anybody but Brandon Palahniuk in this bucket. There's a few guys that were kind of on the edge, and one guy in particular that I cannot believe is at 2.5% at the moment. But Brandon Palahniuk is that guy that's going to go fish some top water, he's going to fish some mid-depth, and he's going to fish some offshore stuff. And actually, he did an interview saying he spent most of his practice offshore, which if he can get 5 bites offshore – he could have a 35-pound bag one day. I mean, there's areas out there that hold just 4 or 5 fish, and they're all massive. And he'll just have to – that'll be one day. He won't be able to do that more than one day. But if he can put that together, he might also come dead last because he'll spend all his time offshore.
I think it's interesting. There's a couple things. Like, I agree on Palahniuk. This just feels like that win he had on Rayburn and Texas Fest – in like 2016, but I think it's interesting that Cody Bird is so low. That's probably who you're talking about, right? I don't know. I think it's interesting that Fighter's so high. Obviously, he's fishing great this year, but I don't feel like this lines up I mean, I think he's going to have a good tournament, but I just don't feel like this is going to be his first win. I could be wrong. I'd love to see it. It would be awesome. But from a fantasy perspective, I don't. I'm surprised that almost 25% of the field is with Fighter. I don't know.
Yeah, that is a really high ownership for a guy that is primarily a grass guy and a smallmouth guy. And this lake has some grass. Actually, the hydrilla has come back pretty well in the last few years. It's not very thick in most places, but it is there. And it doesn't come out very deep. It's a pretty clear lake generally. But it just doesn't fit Seth. I think most people are picking him for momentum's sake more than sure. anything. But there you can make a case for a bunch of these guys in here. But.
I mean, Heron, I mean, he won almost this time of year, right? In a tournament at the, was that Texas Fest as well at that time? Which was really the only data point of like big tournament data we even have, right? And he won it. So it's interesting that he's at less than 3%.
Exactly my point. Yeah, he won it actually flipping grass when the grass was kind of first getting in there. It used to have a lot of grass, and then it all died off for about a decade, and then it started coming back, and he hit it right then, and it was all shallow. He fished shallow the whole tournament, and it was the TTBC 2015 or 2016, somewhere in that range. Is that what you said?
Yep.
But yeah, he's a good pick. I'm surprised that the only thing about Matt Heron is I think it's going to be more of a moving bait tournament than he's used to. I think that he flipped, and it's going to take some moving baits to get it done this time. I'll go to Bucket B. And then Bucket B, I actually swapped out to my backup pick in Bucket B. I had Brandon Lester here for a while because I actually thought that it was going to be a deep water thing way back when I set my roster. And with the water coming up, it's just going to be in the bushes. So Steve Kennedy is who I made a switch to, and I'm doing that despite the fact that Pete Robbins is picking Steve Kennedy. Yeah, I know. It's as good as the last place almost. Steve actually posted on Facebook or Instagram or something that he had a decent practice, which if you have any decent days on Ray Roberts, that's usually better than average. So if he's figured out a little something out there swim jigging, and swim baits are huge on that lake.
That big old white swim jig just flailing around out there. Just like on Conville.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it is. I mean, he's fishing those flooded sticks and stuff. I mean, that was some sort of, old flooded bushes. But this is brand new flooded vegetation. I think there's going to be a ton of fish that flock the banks. So I fully expect him to do well in this one. And I'm willing to go against my gut and pick him, even though Pete's picking him. But.
So Michael Minnan's got both of the injured players on his team. Buddy can't walk or stand. He's got – I forget what he did. He, like, broke his ankle. And New sprained his wrist. So, I don't – bold strategy, Michael.
Yeah.
And with the water coming up in the bushes, Gross makes me a little nervous. But otherwise, decent-looking lineup overall.
He's going deep, guys, right there. I mean, Brian New's really a shallow water fisherman primarily, but he can fish offshore. But Buddy Gross, that guy, he just lives offshore. So, and it could, yeah, I mean, a lot of tournaments are won out there on a Carolina rig in 30 foot of water. So it just depends on, how much the fluctuating water actually is going to change things. But so Bucket C, let me move to that. Bucket C.
Doing some admin here.
That's fine. I actually made a change here too. I had Bill Lowen, and I really like Bill Lowen, swim jig guy, flipping, buzz bait. I think all those things are going to be good. But I went to my backup pick in my article and went Brandon Card, North Carolina guy. All of those guys are stout, and I can just see him. He was so close at Lake Fork, and I think this lake actually follows Lake Fork. In the timeline, it's usually about a month behind Lake Fork, 2-3 weeks at least. And I think that shad spawn's probably not going to be a thing. It could be a little bit with the bushes, but kind of with the water in the bushes. But I think a topwater specifically is going to be a huge player. And if he could throw anything, he's who was the Zell Roland? He's the Zell Roland of our age. He's just a topwater guy. And I think it's going to dominate. I really do. It's going to be fun.
So who would – sorry, I was distracted. Who is your pick?
Brandon Card.
Card.
All right. Brandon Card.
Nice. Yeah. So I went – interesting. I think I mentioned Card as my backup pick in my article, maybe. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah, so I went – so just catch up here. I went Polynyx, so we agree there. In B, I went Ito. I hadn't really heard about the bushes thing, and I don't like changing my lineup. But I think there's two narratives here, right? Like, it could definitely be one in the bushes, or it could really free up the offshore game for the few guys that maybe stay out there, don't have the pressure, and they're not dividing their fish. So I could see both happening, right? Whereas, like, you get a bunch of guys in the top 10 that go to the bushes, but then you get one or two guys that stick deep and they're not splitting their fish with as much pressure. And somebody like, you know, I think Taku Itu with what he did at Fork, you know, these are highly pressured fish being close to the Dallas Metroplex, right? So I think he may have some tricks from Japan up his sleeve doing the swim in Nico rig or some other crazy thing that might get him some really big bites from fish that other people don't get bites from.
Taku is he's a bold choice. I just don't think they're going to – he doesn't like grass. So, first of all, he said in an interview he doesn't like
grass. There's not a lot of grass in this lake, so.
You're right, yeah. So he's going to probably be in that mid-range, I would imagine, which generally speaking, when water rises, the fish rise with it. And so those deep-water fish – might come up into that sort of mid-range, that 10, 12, 15-foot range. And if he can lock into some sort of a pattern, I mean, nobody fishes deep trees out there. Almost nobody fishes deep trees. You're either fishing, flipping shallow trees, or you're fishing in the grass, or you're way offshore. Not a whole lot of in-between. So those fish might actually be less pressured. I don't know. I'd be surprised. I would be surprised if the fish were.
I'm at 80%. I can take risks. And then I went with Palmer. I think we talked about both liking him this week. So, I mean, like I heard some people on BTL say that Ray Roberts fishes more like an Oklahoma lake than it does a Texas lake.
No, it depends. I can kind of see that. Maybe like Fort Gibson type. But it does not fish like Grand Lake. It fishes, I would say it fishes similar to, no, it doesn't really fish like Texoma either, because Texoma has a lot of striper in it. It's a river lake. Really, Ray Roberts, the second you start pulling current and Ray Roberts, the fish shut down. So that's why I think the offshore thing is going to be rough. But we'll wait and see what – wait and see what Kevin says here in a minute. Jordan, I didn't go to Bucket E real quick. Let me hit my Bucket E. I did Jordan Wiggins. And I think Keith Carson's a really good pick too. I see that on yours. But I really feel like Jordan Wiggins, he's a shallow guy. He's going to be up shallow anyway. And he's Jesse Wiggins' brother. And that guy's a hammer. So I think that he's an Alabama boy too. So most of those guys are stout fishermen, but I really feel like he's good for top 15 pretty confidently.
He was definitely on my list, somebody I thought about. And like, interesting is like Bucket E is not the bear cupboard that it normally is for fantasy fishing in the buckets. Like there's some, you know, Carson, Kerr's a pretty good angler. I think Tommy William, where did he win? Louisville?
He won Louisville, yeah.
So there is, you can make a case that that's an interesting pick. LeCue's a pretty good fisherman. You know, we talked about Wiggins. You got schlopper on Drain the Lake. There's something about Japanese anglers in Texas that tend to go like PB&J. Masayuki could be good. I mean, I think, yeah, it's weird that you could make a case for over half the guys in Bucket E. That's not a common thing. Like,
but everybody's picking Shane LaHue. So it's probably just because he's the best known angler in there. But
for sure.
And I think Shane LaHue's a good fisherman. He's a North Carolina boy.
I wouldn't be shocked to see him do well. I mean,
yeah,
I don't think he's 42% good in this bucket. I can see why people gravitated to him because he's, I would say a slightly above average Elite Series angler in Bucket E, and that looks pretty attractive, right? So,
yeah. You know what's going to be really fun is if somebody figures out how to catch smallmouth out there. Did you know there are smallmouth bass in Ray Roberts?
I had just heard that. And I didn't think there like so. A, I think I literally just heard that today on a different podcast. Is there like a fishable population?
It's hard to target them specifically, but they're in places where smallmouth. Well, I don't know. I've heard of people flipping them up in the sticks. So I know that you can come across them doing that, but there's some monsters out there, and there's even. There's a more fun fish out there than that is the mean mouth. There are some huge mean mouth. They set the record, I think, a year and a half ago with, like, I want to say it was almost 6 pounds for a mean mouth in Texas, and that's a monster. You could probably
look that up. These are probably more bonus fish and not something you're going to target.
If you fish, what's weird is they hang out up north. I've never targeted them personally, but they hang out up north in the river in the creeks on rocky points and offshore rock. And a lot of bass, a lot of largemouth hang out in those places too. So it's not going to surprise me at all to see somebody catch a 4, maybe even a 5 pound smallmouth at some point in this tournament and bring it in.
Thanks, William. Appreciate it. He's talking about a recent tourney vid that I did.
Oh, did you win?
Yeah, we won a little Tuesday nighter.
Nice. Those add up.
We got the cost of overhead on a Tuesday nighter is pretty low. So it's almost all profit when you're fishing local derbs. So that's good. So Matt appears to have some local knowledge of Ray Bob here. He says, the shad spawns seems over. Bluegill has been swim jigs and working well in the bushes. Only a few offshore spots seemingly firing north of Wolf, water in the high 70s, 3 feet high still.
Yeah, I think is it coming down? Because it was 4 foot high, almost 4 foot high yesterday.
I don't know, Kevin. So, is it coming down yet?
Uh-oh. What's up?
What's up, buddy?
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, man. Can y'all hear me again?
We call a boomer. We call this a live stream.
Live stream, yeah.
That's fair. So you got here. You made it. Special guest, Kevin Bryant. And he's here because he's the one that carries Koi in team tournaments. And is the expert on Ray Roberts.
No. I might be an expert on Ray Roberts, but it's an expert on what not to do typically. So. I'm here to tell y'all who not to pick. No, I've been on that lake a lot. I've seen it go through a lot of different phases. I will say though, that probably some of the most enjoyable days I've ever had on that lake was with Koi practicing for a big tournament when it was very similar conditions. It fishes really well when it's high. Something about those Florida bass, those Florida strain bass out there, they love to get up in that new vegetation. Mm-hmm. There's, as most of y'all probably heard, there's not a ton of population as far as fish go on that lake, but there's a lot of big ones, and they just seem to get kind of crazy when it gets high. So I've really been looking forward to this tournament. I've been hoping and praying that the water level stays high. Because I think they're going to smash them. I think it's setting up well for them to smash them, and it's kind of anybody's ball game at this point. So pretty excited about it, really.
So when you say smash, what do you think is going to take for a winning weight for 3 days?
Over 60 pounds.
Any chance they hit 70?
Do what?
Hit 70 any chance?
I haven't looked at the weather forecast. What's it supposed to be like this weekend? It's pretty hot, right?
It's warm, but not really rainy. So they're not going to be adding any water to it, I don't think. I'll go look it up right now. Let's see.
How about the wind? The wind is always the key factor on that lake. It is the ruiner of patterns on Ray Roberts.
Yeah, it looks like great weather. Oh, man, partly cloudy. Highs in the low 90s, 5% chance of rain, variable wind speeds. It's going to be good. It's going to be really good.
What it's going to do is that's going to really spread everything. It's already going to be spread out because of all the high water, but it's really going to spread everybody out. And you're going to be seeing people catch them all over that lake. I mean, there is good water all over that lake, but when it's windy, man, it is just hard to fish a lot of that lake. There's just no high elevation around the lake to block the wind. And it just seems like a south or a north wind just tumbles down that lake. So would I be shocked to see 70? No, not at all. I mean, but I also, based on my personal experiences on Ray Roberts, I wouldn't be shocked if it took less than 50 pounds to win. You just never know on that lake because those fish are so finicky. But with stable weather, that helps. That helps a lot. So,
sure.
So a little bit about that. Why
do you think there's not a ton of fish in Ray Roberts, or doesn't seem like a place where you go and catch a huge number of fish?
It used to be. Well, so way back in the day, it was supposed to be the Lake Fork of Texas. They built that thing to be a monster bass producing lake. And they flooded all the timber, and it was for a while. It had really, really thick mats. It had tons of grass. I didn't get to fish it in the heyday. Kevin did. And it was a phenomenal lake back then. Frogs flipping, just a clear water grass lake. And then they got, I guess the water got really low, and it killed all the grass. And then they got zebra mussels in there. So it became a really clear lake, and it just never got the grass going back until really in the last couple of years. Last few years, there's been at least a better population of hydrilla and some other different milfoil and different grasses growing back there. So it may get better. We'll see.
Yeah, so I actually recently just fished a tournament out there in, I guess it was April. There's actually a lot of milfoil and coontail growing in that lake right now, a lot. Nice. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some guys fishing in it. Well, I guess it wasn't high when I fished it, so maybe not. But that was a good sign of things to come. Now we just need to pray that it doesn't get real low again, because what happened is we just went into a really bad drought back in, I guess, like the early 2010s. Until the floods of 2015 or 16, I think it was. I mean, it rained every single measurable rain every day in June. Before that, yeah, the lake was full of hydrilla. I mean, unbelievable amount of hydrilla. Like if you pulled up a map and you looked at what's called Wolf Island, you're going to see it a lot this weekend. It's kind of the marker of like, okay, beyond this island from the south, it's the danger zone when it comes to the timber.
Sure.
And so there's a massive flat behind that island leading towards in between, or the point in between Lynn Creek and Wolf Creek. And that giant flat used to be a complete grass mat, a 10-foot deep grass mat in the summertime. Like it looked like you were driving into land, basically. I mean, like mats you see on Gunnersville and stuff. So, sure. That went away, it just really hurt, I think, the survival rate of the spawns. I really do. Mm-hmm. White bass got in the lake. That typically hurts the lakes around here because the lakes around here, they're not river systems. They're not great ecosystems for growing like a massive population of fish like those Tennessee River lakes are, because we don't have that current. So I think that's a huge part, and Coy hit it, you know, hit the nail on the head. The grass going away hurt, and I was really excited to see a lot of grass. Not hydrilla, unfortunately, but we'll take milfoil and coontail all day. It's better than nothing. So
sure.
Yeah, and really for it being such a big lake, it really fishes. There's only a certain parts of the lake that traditionally are any good. If you're following a guy that's on the west arm of the lake, he's probably not going to win. I would bet a lot of money that guy's not going to win if he's fishing the west side of the lake. You need to fish the east side. You need to fish the north side. I say that. I know, Kevin. We've done pretty good on the west side, but it's one of those things that it's hit or miss. They might be there in practice and then they're totally gone. But you don't have the timber on the west side. It's a lot more rocky, steep banks. It doesn't have the habitat that the northeast side of the lake has.
Correct. But you add 4 feet of water and there's a lot That's of true. Habitat on that west side. I don't know if you remember our practices for that Bass Champs, but we smashed some biggins on that west side in those flooded trees on those points over there. I really think you're going to see a lot of guys running a lot of main lake secondary points, and you're going to see what I witnessed out there was like 5 and 6 pounders wolf packing on those points. Like caught a 6 pounder on a whopper plopper, had 8 or 10 the same size or bigger follow it to the boat. Like it's setting up. If I remember right, this was the same time of year. That tournament was in June, I think.
It was June, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it was Ray Roberts is almost always in April, and it was the one year they moved to the summer.
Yeah, and it was very similar situation, very similar winter, where like winter kind of dragged on and the lake was still kind of cool. Like it hadn't really gotten hot yet. I mean, I fished a tournament on Lake Louisville just south of it this past Sunday, and the water temperature in the morning was 74 degrees. Like that's pretty cool for, you know, beginning of June in Texas, you know. Yeah, I mean, you could even there's a small chance that there could even be some shad spawn stuff going on this weekend. I mean, that's what we were seeing when we had these experiences on the lake in similar conditions. And I had some buddies that fished a tournament on Eagle Mountain, which isn't far from here, far from Ray Roberts. And this past weekend, and they said the shad were spawning from the dam all the way to the river. So. Wow. There's still some of that going on in lakes around here. It's just been a weird year. It really has. I mean, you just fish are kind of everywhere. And I think you can really just catch them however you want, but I don't see the offshore deal playing. I just don't see it. It hasn't materialized anywhere else I've fished around here. So I mean, you might see a few fish caught, but like, maybe the first day, and then I think it's going to go away. I could be completely wrong, but
you were saying you didn't want to believe that the deep water thing was not going to happen. But how do you feel now, like after hearing a little bit about this?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like I got a little bit of a mix on my team, my fantasy team, anyways. Like, I just want to see a good classic, honestly. It sounds. I mean, like, so even this shallow game, but do you see like? I would imagine the guy that wins this is somebody that's going to run different areas in new water, right? You're not going to go to the same hole 3 days in a row and probably blow this thing out, right? Like that's really unlikely based on what I'm hearing.
I would say fishing points. You could rotate the same points every day and probably catch some.
But you're going to maybe these 2 points, you catch them on day one, but it's these other 3 points on day two, right? Like you may – right, but it's not likely that you're going to go to the same 2 points every day and wreck them, right?
Probably not. Yeah,
probably
they don't
not.
Sit there; they're moving around. Yeah,
probably not. Yeah, I mean, that I definitely think that's going to be the case, just because the lakes change so much. I mean, they're a lot of guys were saying that you can throw their practice out the window. I mean, the lake came up less than a foot since their pre-practice. It didn't come up like a ton, so I think a lot of those guys probably learned a lot. But they're going to have to keep following fish, especially if I don't think they're going to, just because Lewisville's still so high. But if they start dropping water, I mean, those fish are really going to start pulling out to the edges of that stuff. And that's where I think your guys, like your Todd Oddens and your Steve Kennedys, they're masters with swim jigs and bladed jigs. Bill Lowen, that's why I think you're going to see those guys really excel in this tournament, because they can, all those guys can flip bushes with the best of them. But when that moving bait bite starts and those fish get suspended after the pressure, because they're going to feel the pressure, those are the guys that I think that can get those reactions, those extra reaction strikes throughout the day, are going to be the ones to succeed in this tournament. And that's why I have Steve Kennedy winning it.
I don't know if you know this, but I changed to Steve Kennedy yesterday. Go figure.
Oh, really?
Kevin and I, we almost always end up with the same roster. We don't coordinate, but we think very similarly. So it doesn't surprise me. But I've got Brandon Card leading day one. Let me just say that.
I have Brandon Card on my roster, and I took him off.
I've got Matt Airy, so I actually added the North Carolina guys.
Who do I have now? Let's see. Well, I'm looking at it. If I can get it to load.
It would not surprise me one bit if the person that won, either it's going to go one of two ways. I think there's going to be a lot of fish caught, you're probably going to see only a handful of guys really get on them good. I think you're going to see it really top heavy. So, like, the top 10 are going to smash them because they figured out kind of the rhythm. It's hard to find a rhythm on that lake. Like, you can fish for 5 hours without a bite, and then you find an area that's got several fish in it, and you can figure them out there. But they're not going to be there the next day. It just seems like they're always moving. But I think you're going to see guys that zero, and I think you're going to see guys that catch 25 bass in a day. It's a hard lake to be consistent on across the whole body of water. But wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. And is it likely that you'll see a guy bust a big bag and then literally bring in two fish the next day?
Yes,
definitely could.
Yeah, that's for sure. So if somebody busts a big bag on the first day, which somebody will, I mean, it's the classic, it's going to happen, and it's Ray Roberts and the fish are chewing, someone's going to bust a big bag on the first day. That person, I mean, I guess this is kind of an obvious statement, but that person is going to have a huge advantage over the field because of how the pressure can affect this lake. I think the lake being high is going to help with that, but say somebody busts 25 and then like the second place is 20, you know, that 5 pounds could carry you all the way. I mean, that could be huge.
It'd be a Caleb Kufel Lake Fork kind of a Lake Gunnersville kind of situation where he got ahead so far and nobody could catch him. Yep. I could see that.
Mm-hmm. So, you want to? Did y'all already go through picks? Y'all did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can run down yours quick. We already shared ours.
Yeah, I can do it quick. So, I think mine's completely changed from when I sent it to Coy the other day, just to kind of compare. So, I have Patrick Walters in A. And I'm thinking because of the moving bait deal. And he's kind of showing he can really just kind of do anything. I mean, didn't he win with a chatterbait on Winyah Bay?
I think his first win was Fork. But
I thought he was in the top. I feel like he was in the top 10 there, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, who are we talking about?
Patrick Walters. I think he's from that part of the. I mean, he
had some good tournaments, like in his college career or something like that.
I must be confusing him with somebody else. Anyways, Patrick Walters in A. I think there's a lot of good picks in A. I originally had Brandon Polinick. And that's who I kind of want to win. That's kind of guy I'm rooting for. And then I'm also rooting for Zaldane as well. Just cause he's a local guy. He's kind of a buddy. I've gotten to know him and his wife, Trey, a decent amount. And I know he's super jacked up about this tournament. I just think all of his like pre-practice was spent offshore. And I just think I just don't think that's going to play. And not that he can't catch him up in the bushes. I just think it could spin him a little bit. Sorry, Chris, if you ever watch this.
You know, to his credit, though, I remember when they did that Bull Shoals Norfolk tournament, he did really well in that tournament, flipping a drop shot in flooded bushes in dirty water. So I know he can do it. Yeah, he did it.
Okay.
You flip a drop shot in the right bush at Ray Roberts, and you might catch a 10-pounder that'll take every bit of line and break your heart. So, he probably won't have a drop shot tied on, but maybe.
Yeah. All I know is that dude's going to be amped, and I hope they have a camera on him for the first fish he catches, because he's going to lose his mind, like absolutely lose his mind. And his antics are so fantastic. I love watching him catch fish because he just gets so jacked up about it. And I hope there's a camera on him on that first day. I'm assuming
I'd be shocked if Zaldane didn't have a camera on day one.
Yeah, I'll be shocked too.
You'll get to watch him land on a fish for 10 minutes, though. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
He's methodical.
Yeah. All right, so Steve Kennedy and B, I already told y'all that's kind of my pick to win it. I have John Cox and C. I think the aluminum boat guys are going to have a big advantage. And John Cox has already won a big tournament this year on a flooded Smith Lake, right? So he is a master with a swim jig, and he's really good when those fish get in that flooded stuff. He's just good at it. And he has spent more days on the water in tournament action than anybody else this year. I mean, that dude is just probably more tuned in than anybody right now. I mean, I don't know how many in a row, but he's gotten checks in like three or four tournaments in a row that he didn't even practice for. Like, it's kind of crazy. I mean, on
Neely Henry with a 96% or 96th place finish. I think it was Neely or Gunnersville, one or the other. I picked him.
Neely. But, yeah. He was.
Yeah. Bad. Yeah. So, it's all right. He's going to do well in this one. He comes to play when it comes to the big one. So, and it just sets up.
He and Justin Kerr and John Cox are I think they're travel buddies for this deal, or they're at least friends. There's some
for this one. It's probably Keith Carson.
Keith Carson. Yep, that's who it is. Yep, had it wrong. I wasn't looking at the list. Keith Carson. Yeah, he has been practicing, Keith, and you have to imagine that he's going to key him in on some things that he found out. So if he can get any sort of little edge, I can see him being dangerous, especially because he has an aluminum boat on that lake. So
yeah, I have Todd Otten. I think he's a little frustrated. He got second last year, and again, he is. If anyone is a master with a bladed jig in this bunch, it's that guy. And I just really think that's going to play. And the reason I think that, not just if it's falling water, a guy I fish a lot of tournaments with has been stroking them on a chatterbait all year. I've watched him all year do it. And he just did it at Louisville this past weekend. And if somebody can figure out the little nuances with the chatterbait, don't just throw a white. Don't throw an all white. Pick up that green chatterbait, and you're going to smash them. You're going to smash them. I can't wait to watch somebody pick up a green chatterbait this weekend and go to town. I mean, it is all the difference.
Todd always throws black and blue.
Huh?
Todd Otten always throws black and blue.
Yeah. He threw the Rayburn Red or the Red at Red Crawl at Gunnersville in the Classic last year. So he kind of made that famous. Him and I know Lee threw it some, and I know Hank threw it some. But yeah, so I have Todd Otten in D. I just think he's been around a long time, or in D. And I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to have a top 10, maybe a top 5 in this one. And then E, Keith Carson. Keith Carson just won on Wright Patman not that long ago in the MPFL, doing what he's going to be doing this weekend, flipping bushes, throwing chatterbaits, throwing swim jigs, frogs. That's what it's going to take to win this weekend. He's going to be right in his wheelhouse. And that's the kind of guys I want to pick, those kind of guys this weekend, the guys that are going to be in their wheelhouse because the lake's changed. It's not your normal Ray Roberts. And I think the bushes is where it's going to be won. I just no doubt in my mind. And if I'm wrong, then whatever. I give up. You never know. These guys are so good. They'll find those little things that are so different. I'm just excited and giddy to watch them attack this lake. You know. I'm pumped.
Yeah. It should be a good tournament, it sounds like. So that's cool. Yeah. I mean, I went Polinick because I feel like he can do it all. And I feel like he's the kind of guy that can fish shallow and then bop out and just have like one or two weird offshore spots where he gets one or two bites per day or something. You know what I mean? Like where he mixes it in. Taku, I am kind of banking that he's going to find something offshore, and then hopefully like the bushes draws the majority of the field shallow, and maybe that cracks the door for somebody because they're not competing with, you know. And then if anybody knows how to catch pressured fish, it's a Japanese angler. So, you know, showing him something that all you Texas guys have been showing him for the last 30 years, he might show him something different and open something up. I think Luke Palmer fits right into what you're saying. Like he's super comfortable. And, you know, for the same reason you pick Cox, Luke Palmer should be a really strong player at this event.
Those Oklahoma boys love fishing flooded, flipping stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good at it. They deal with it every single year, flooded water. Oklahoma gets pounded with rain all the time, and those dudes know how to catch them in these conditions. So I think any Oklahoma angler is a good pick too. So
yeah. And then my philosophy is he won his first Open. He won his first Lead Series event, and he's fishing his first Classic. And he's a
yeah,
he's
what
a
about thrift. That broken hand?
It's a sprained hand. It's not broken.
You imagine flipping with a sprained hand for 3 days?
Whew. He switched to reeling with the other hand. He can do it. He's a thrift disciple. He can do it.
I mean, yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing.
And then we agree on Carson. So,
so I think he's actually, in my mind, just convinced myself back to Brandon Polinick and A. and the reason is a lot of those fish that Koi and I caught when it was very similar conditions were on whopper ploppers and big walking baits. And yeah. I could see him putting that Arashi topwalker in his hand and going to town on some Ray Roberts points. I mean, I could see that happening. And so I'm going to go back with Brandon Polinick and A because he was my gut pick. So I don't feel bad. I'm doing it right now. Sorry, Patrick Walters, you're out.
Yeah.
And he's due. Man, he is. Polinick's due.
Matt said, so Matt from the Keystar BMP out there a whole bunch up until off limits.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw in an interview, though, he's been almost all of his time offshore, which 4 foot ago would have been the right thing to do. But
he also spent a lot of his time running the lake, from what he said. Like learning how to run around the lake. And that is a huge factor on that. I've been fishing that lake for years, and I still get terrified running around on that lake. And it hinders me a lot. I get stuck on that south end of the lake, and there's nothing wrong with the south end. I think the tournament's going to get won on the south end. I think the biggest fish in that lake live on the south end. But that timber draws a lot of boats, and there's a lot of tournaments won up there. I'm not going to say that there's not, but I do think that it being flooded on that south end is going to draw a lot of those monster fish that are typically already out in 30 foot brush piles back up into that stuff, especially if the bait's up in there. So
That spot that Danny Golden caught, or his guide clients caught those fish on the south end of it a couple years ago. Yeah, so what did they catch there? It was back-to-back, maybe back-to-back-to-back. It was a 13 and an 11 and a 10, I think.
And in that same – are you talking about like when we were catching them good out there?
No, this was years ago whenever when he caught them on an A-rig. It was winter time.
Yeah, A-rig and a jerkbait. His client caught the lake record. Almost 16 pounds on a jerk bait.
That's right.
And then they also went out another day and caught like a 12 and a 10 and an 11. And that's different. You would have seen some of that if the classic would have been what it was supposed to be.
Right.
Jerk bait would have. I mean, I would have picked Hank Cherry all day to win it if it would have. I would have picked him to go back to back if it would have been back in March. 100%. I mean, it would have been right in his wheelhouse.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think even though Polinick studied offshore, he seems smart enough that, you know, he won't have to spend his time graphing, and he'll dabble and test that stuff in practice, and he'll either determine whether they're there or not, and he'll adjust if they're not. And I don't think he'll die out there, but I don't know.
So what do you think in your studies, Rich? What do you think the big bass of the tournament's going to be? What are you hoping it's going to be?
I mean, I have no. I was going to actually ask you guys: are we going to see one over 10 pounds or not?
That's post spawn.
No, unlikely. Not impossible, but unlikely.
It would surprise me.
I just don't see it happening.
So, what do you think? Big fish is 8, 9.
It might be almost 10 pounds.
I would not be surprised to see a bunch of sevens. And a handful of eights, and maybe one or two in the 9 pound class. But those might be like 14 pound bags. You know, you might have an 8 pounder and a couple of twos or something like that. They're kind of random. It's hard to target those giants. You might catch a giant, and then in the next flip or for the next 5 hours, you only catch non keepers. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I don't think anybody's going to catch a 40 pound bag or 30 pounds even, but I think you'll see some high 20s throughout the tournament.
Nice.
I agree.
Be sweet.
I agree with that.
So it's a 14 inch minimum, I assume.
Yeah. You're going to take Matt Finland out. He lives on the lake. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I saw that. I was just waiting for you to finish up. Hit me up on Facebook, man.
You're assuming he maybe just wants to have lunch. Maybe like coffee. You know. I don't know.
The first time I ever hung out, I asked him if he wanted to go out to eat to lunch. And he said, where do you want to go? I said, let's go to Olive Garden. He thought I was literally asking him on a little date to Olive Garden. But quickly let him know that I was a married man. And I was inviting he and his wife to go to Olive Garden to go eat. Not just CNI. So, Matt, either way, but.
I was like, I mean, this guy's pretty poor, I guess. I guess we're going to Olive Garden. He likes his Olive Garden. So here we go. I was like, yeah. That was really early on in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Ken thinks Zell Dangerous is going to get a deep double digit. So.
If anyone's going to do it, I can see him doing it.
But back to Coy's point is that he'll catch a 10-pounder, and then that will be the only fish he brings in that day.
Could be.
Yeah, because he'll get some giant bait locked in his hand. That is the only – I love Chris, but, man, he really gets locked into that big bait philosophy. And, good for him for sticking to his guns, but, man, it can be hard to watch him not be versatile sometimes. I'm like, dude, just, like, put up the – think about it, Fork, like if he would have put up the glide baits and picked up a big topwater. I mean, he was around giants. I mean, he was. I mean, I guess he lost some big ones in the final day there. I mean, no one was catching Lee. I mean, Lee flat out freaking crushed him. But in that tournament, the whole time I was like, man, just watching him, like, dude, just pick up that walking bait. Like, pick up a topwater or do something different. But he's got that swing for the fence mentality. And I mean, he's an Elite Series pro, and I'm not. So, what can I say?
He'll be winging a big swim bait, though. I guarantee he's going to throw a big swim bait.
You know who else is going to be throwing one since he just won an open throwing one? Brandon Polinick's going to be throwing that mag draft around some flooded bushes. And I can see that being something. I really could. I mean, it's just you never know. That's one of those moving bait deals that might get a couple key bites for those guys. And I was going to go back to Polinick and why you picked him, because you said he's kind of a jack of all trades, can kind of do anything. If you watch any of his vlogs that he does, his videos that he puts out on YouTube, just watching him, like when he makes the cut and does, gets into the third and fourth day of a tournament, like he is doing different things every morning, like just trying different stuff, yeah, doing new things, like always experimenting. And it's pretty amazing that he's one of those guys. I kind of feel like he's I kind of lump him with like Jordan Lee and Jacob Wheeler, like guys that are really good at putting a bunch of rods on the deck and just fishing everything in front of them and fishing the moment and like just putting something together as the day goes on. And at the end of the day being like, I just went and caught him, you know? Yeah, I could see that kind of fisherman doing really well in this tournament. So, because I think it's going to take a bunch of baits.
And he's gotten much better at avoiding the bombs. Like early in his career, he would do that and win a couple, but he'd have some just tanks, right? And now, like, he rarely misses a top 50 cut.
Yeah, he's pretty impressive. That's why I changed back to him in A. Because he was my initial gut pick to win it. I think it's Steve Kennedy's time, but Brandon Polinick was my initial gut pick to win it.
Yeah, and the 6-inch mag draft catches 3-pounders all day. Like, it's barely bigger than a chatterbait, honestly. Like,
I've caught 1-pound smallmouth on a 6-inch bull shad. So,
yeah.
I mean,
Kevin, fish just eat we talked big about.
Speaking of smallmouth, tell us about these elusive Ray Bob smallmouth.
Yeah, I want to see what you think as far as what you think. What's the biggest smallmouth somebody's going to catch in this tournament?
I don't know about smallmouth, but I bet there's a couple 4 and 5 pound mean mouths caught. There's a lot more mean mouths in that lake than there are smallmouths. Hmm. The smallmouths are very, very, very elusive. You don't see many actual smallmouth in that lake being caught out of that lake. But you've over the last few years, you've seen a ton of big mean mouth. So you're gonna see some big mean mouth for sure, because they'll be up in those bushes too. And those are the ones that'll probably smash the top water. Sure. Hope they get one of those on TV. That'd be really cool on live.
Yeah. That would be the danger for Steve Kennedy is if he picks up the big bait. I think those of us that think Kennedy will do well, we're banking on him flipping around that 3/4-inch white swim jig in the bushes is how we think him doing well. If he starts picking up the big baits, that could lead to him doing the other direction. I mean, where he gets too tied into something and swings too hard. I think this is more of like when he won on Dardanelle, when he, right, like that type of fishing.
Yeah.
That was actually the tournament that I thought of when I was thinking Steve Kennedy was Dardanelle more than even Conroe. He loves to throw the swim jig, and he will catch – it would be hard for him. If he'll throw that, he'll catch a good limit every day. If he can catch that good limit and then add – a giant or a 5 or 6 pounder, even just one of those, then I think he'll have a legitimate shot. If he can fill it with 3 pounders and have 1 6-pounder each day, I think he has a shot.
Yeah. Matt Quinlan just made a really good point. And I know someone personally that always catches them on a spinnerbait on Ray Roberts. A spinnerbait is huge on Ray Roberts. But if it's variable winds it's not very windy, that's where I see the guy that picks up the chatterbait is going to catch those fish that might catch that the spinnerbait might catch when it's windy, you know. And that's why I really think that chatterbait's going to play, but definitely you're going to see some guys chunking around a spinnerbait. I mean, it's flooded bushes, that's a staple thing to do in flooded bushes.
Nice.
So
and are we going to see a frog play?
I hope so.
Yes, I think we will. I think if you're good at skipping a frog and you can get it back in those bushes, that's honestly, I've seen Seth Fighter do that. I've seen him do it, and he's really, really good at skipping a frog. And a lot of people can't skip a frog, but if you can get that thing to get behind that front edge of the flooded bushes, especially if the water is still and it's not dropping and they're staying back in it and behind it, you could absolutely come away with some monster bites like that.
You know, frog is absolutely 110% my favorite way to catch fish ever. I've caught a lot of big bags on a frog. I've just caught a lot of big fish on a frog. Ray Roberts, the frog bite on that lake has always eluded me. I don't know why. Even when we were catching them really good, when it was flooded, it wasn't on a frog. It was on big walking baits and ploppers and burning bull shads and kind of doing some different topwater stuff. But it is hard to find out there, I think, a frog bite, especially kind of this early in the summer, late in the spring, where they're not really fry guarding anymore, you know. But I could definitely see if someone's, you know, patient and found an area that's got a good population of fish in it, and, you know, they may pick that up and catch a couple key fish on it. But I don't think it's going to be the sole bait for anybody this sure. weekend. But I definitely think some fish will be caught on a frog.
Or they just find a little trash mat here, a back of a pocket, or one little area.
Yeah, where trash mats for sure.
Bluegill beds or something like that. Who knows, right? So,
yeah.
So first day, 53 anglers. How many limits do you think we're going to see?
Man, I don't know. Good question. I bet I'm going to take it from the other end of that spectrum. I think that there are going to be I bet there's six zeros. I bet there's six zeros.
So negative.
That may be a little bold. I bet that may be pretty bold. But I really think that that lake can – and there's some newbies here and some guys that are not used to the classic, and so that's going to add some pressure. I mean, I might – maybe we'll drop it down to four. But I think it'll be – I think you're going to see several zeros. I bet of the 53 anglers, I bet
half?
Less than 20 catch a limit every day that they fish. It would be surprising to me if more than that happened, more than that caught it. What do you think, Kev? Am I off?
I don't think there's going to be any zeros on the first day. And that's just basing on my experience when it's flooded bushes on that lake. They just get in it. They get up in it and they bite. Those fish in those bushes, they're just, to me, those fish are typically easier to get to bite than highly pressured offshore fish on a lake that has no current. You know, I just feel like they're gonna bite really well. And I don't think there's gonna be any zeros on the first day. And I think less than 10 anglers won't catch a limit on the first day. Honestly, I won't be shocked. I guess I will. I don't know. I'm trying to watch my expectations, but like I honestly wouldn't be shocked if everyone had a limit the first day.
See, Coy's negative. Negative?
I guess I'm just
negative Coy.
I have some really negative. Bad experience.
I'm typically the negative one when we're fishing together, so
I don't know. But the tournaments that we've actually fished out there, it's usually 35-mile-an-hour winds, or it's April, late April, and it's 22 degrees outside with 30-mile-an-hour just straight-line winds. We've always had miserable experiences, so I don't get my hopes up on Ray Roberts. I don't know.
So, but everyone catches them out there. I mean, it always takes big bags to win on that lake. And that – so – the tournament we're talking about was a Bass Champs tournament in June several years ago. It was flooded, and we went out and practiced, I guess, two weekends in a row, maybe three different days. And it was dead calm, just kind of a kind of cloudy a little bit, but dead calm. very sounds like kind of similar to what the conditions might be this weekend. And 25 pounds a day, no problem every time we went out on a topwater. Like, no problem. It was crazy. I'd never seen that before on that lake. Tournament comes around, it blows 30 miles an hour out of the south, and literally it like 3 and 4 foot swells are rolling into every single point that we had, except for like four, which we weren't the only one on that pattern. And we were rotating like 4 or 5 points that were protected with like 40 other boats. It felt like. And so we never even got to do what we found because everything just got destroyed. And what we didn't do is make an adjustment, like what the winners ended up doing was picking up a big giant spinnerbait and getting in those waves and getting in those bushes and smashed. I think they had like 27 or 28 pounds that day throwing a big spinnerbait from what I remember. And we didn't make that adjustment. We're not Elite Series pros, so we're not. Sometimes we make those adjustments. These guys make those adjustments almost every time. And so if those guys found that in practice and it happens to blow in the tournament, that guy will probably pick up a spinnerbait and smash them. I mean, if that bite is happening, this tournament's going to be wild. I mean, it's going to be wild to see. You're going to see a lot of really cool topwater bites. A lot.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you missed this earlier, but I think these guys both thought somewhere between 8 and 9 pounds big bass.
Yeah, I bet day one it'll be in the 9 pound range. I just think there's a whole lot of fish out there in the 5 and 6 pound class that you're going to see a lot of that. A lot of guys are going to hold up some big ones.
Do these 8, 9 pounders get up in the bushes too? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's not just
an option. You might see somebody get them offshore. I can't say that the offshore bite's not going to happen. It all depends on if they pull current and if how dirty it is. And I mean, it's going to be stable. So it's not going to come up anymore. If anything, it's going to drop, which I don't think that's necessarily going to hurt that bite. It could just help. Those fish are going to come out of some of that stuff maybe and go back out there. But if you're going to have an offshore thing, I would imagine it's going to be on Sunday and not on Friday.
Yeah. And the lake is clean right now. I mean, all the flooded lakes around here are clean because we've gotten so much rain. There's no more dirty runoff coming into the lakes. Everything's saturated around here. I mean, Lewisville was clean from top to bottom. I mean, it's clean. I guarantee it's clean. It was clean when we were out there the last time it was flooded. I mean, it's going to be clean. So there, you know, the big bass might come from offshore. It might. I'm going to stick to my guns and say this tournament will not be won offshore. Someone may mix it in a little bit, but I fished Lewisville on Sunday, which fish is kind of similar when it comes to offshore. Lewisville's 5.5 feet high when I fished it. And I fished 3 of mine and Coy's absolute best offshore spots. And they were, a graveyard. They were empty. Nothing. There was nothing on them. No bait either. That's the key. The bait's still shallow on a lot of these lakes because it was 75 degrees. I mean, they're not, nothing's getting offshore yet. You know, so they're going to follow their forage. And if the forage is shallow, that's where the fish are going to be. They're not going to be out there in that deep stuff. And so, I mean, all the bait on Lewisville was in like 2 to 7 foot. All of it. And I could see it because it looked like it was 1 foot deep on my graph when I was sitting at 8 feet. So
yeah, I guess forage. So this is a shad lake, bluegill, crappies. Anything else? Is it just kind of your basic Texas lakes? Yep. Got all the above.
Basic, yep.
A lot of shad. Nothing super crazy, but there's a lot of crappie in there. I think mostly it's a shad lake primarily.
So there's some grass. It's coming back a little bit, but it's mostly a hardcover lake, right? Yep.
Yeah, lots and lots of stumps. In fact, the 4 foot of water that's on there is going to make it really interesting because a lot of the stumps that are out there stick out about 4 foot out of the water. So you're going to see a lot of broken props, a lot of busted lower units. It wouldn't surprise me if you had at least a couple guys that it got took out because they ran over the – and unfortunately, I have very personal experience doing that. It's not hard to do. So it's a dangerous lake, really, when you think about it. I mean, especially when you can't see those stumps that used to be even just a couple inches or a foot out of the water. So it'll make it interesting.
So I think Panger's prop bet today was over under 4 lower units. You're taking the over?
I actually texted with a group of buddies. And I said, how many lower units do y'all think are going to get torn up? And this was after we were watching Ronnie Moore's video of him running with Patrick Walters out of the back of Indian Creek. He took some turns that I was like, oh, man, you're running. I've ran with somebody all the way to the back of Indian Creek. And some of the stuff he was running over, big, big hard stumps. it was making my butt pucker and I wasn't even in the boat. So
I'm going to take the under, but I think it's going to be 3 or 4. So, I mean, it's probably right there.
I'm going to take the under because I think, you know, a lot of there's going to be, I bet 25 guys run into some of them while they're driving.
Right. But it doesn't fully take it out. Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of the tops of those trees are not going to be that hard, you know, those big, tall, skinny trees. It's not going to take out a little unit. It might ding up a prop if you hit it right, but
I'll take, you know, the over on insurance claims.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. 53, actually. 53 insurance claims. Wait, how many guys are running aluminum boats? How many guys are running aluminum boats?
At least
maybe 3 or 4.
So subtract those guys from the insurance.
No, there's more. Yeah, we got Lowen, Carson, Cox.
There's one other guy that's Shane LaHue's not. It's one of those type of guys.
You're thinking Skylar Hamilton.
He's not.
Oh yeah.
Gustafson's in it.
It'll be interesting to see for sure. It's a scary lake. It really is. It's dangerous. So, and those guys, they throw caution to the wind and they drive across stuff that if they can't see it, it's not there.
Yeah. Somebody on here just commented saying something about not imagining an 8-pounder in a bush.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's fun. it's a lot of fun. I've caught several biggins on a frog around bushes. And it's a lot of fun. But yes, it's not easy to get them out for sure. So you're going to see some heartbreak this weekend.
So I think you guys keep talking about reaction baits. Do you not see a flipping bite? Is that not a thing?
Oh, that's going to be the number one thing to me. I just think that the guy that's going to be able to put that down and pick up a moving bait, I think the moving bait to me is going to catch some key fish. I don't think it's going to be the dominating factor. I just don't see it being completely one flipping. I think a moving bait is going to definitely come into play. Maybe in the second and third day, especially when those fish start kind of getting more pressure, a little suspended, you know, kind of hanging off the bushes a little more. Because I mean, it's a big lake to me because I don't fish all the lakes that all the pros fish. They fish some massive lakes, but they're going to make that lake fish real small, real quick. Cause those dudes can just cover so much water and those fish are going to feel that pressure after the first day or two. And they'll start suspending off of those bushes a little more. And that's where I really think you'll start seeing that come into play the second and third day.
Yeah. Flip and bite will be good for 12 to 14 pounds. Some guys might catch more, but I think it's going to be kind of that 2.5-pound average, maybe. with an occasional 3 or 4 pounder that'll keep you doing it. But if you want to win it, you're going to have to do something else. You won't win it doing that.
Interesting. Yeah. So Nathan, sounds like you're new to the stream, stumbled upon YouTube. So we're talking about the Bassmasters Elite Series. And this weekend is the Bassmasters Classic, which is essentially the Super Bowl of bass fishing. So this is like our Daytona 500. This is our Super Bowl. This is where the best 50 anglers in the world that have competed through various circuits to get here are fishing for $300,000 and a world championship. So Bassmaster.com. Hopefully to sum it up without going into super details, but thanks for tuning in and thanks for the question, Nathan.
Yeah.
Best spawning spot on the lake, Matt. No doubt, Indian Creek.
So how about a square bill? Is the water too clear for a square bill, or you think that's...
You've been out there since I have.
You're not going to see me throwing a square bill through newly flooded willow bushes.
Yeah, you think they're too green for a square bill?
Too green. Okay. Almost going to be too green for a chatterbait, but you got to have it in your hand. You got to do it.
If it was normal pool, you could throw it around stumps. There are some rocks. Isle de Wall actually has got a little bit of riprap. The dam has been known to catch some good fish on it. There are some areas that you could catch some fish on a square bill, but it's just not – it's not with the flooded conditions, it's probably not going to play as much.
Yeah. We did go through those, Lee. Let me see if I can – Brandon Polnick, Keith Carson, John Cox,
Steve Kennedy.
Steve Kennedy and South Carolina guy.
Todd Otten.
There it is.
I can see him.
My picks.
Oh, what else have we talked about? Is there anything we haven't covered about Ray Bob that we need to talk about that would be sad that we didn't talk about before this weekend?
Man.
Missed the first hour of the show, so I don't know everything y'all talked about, so...
We kind of left a lot of the deep dive lake stuff until you got here. We talked about kind of the classic in general and what it's all about and you know why you should go and that type of.
I just think the thing that I am the most excited about is that most of these guys probably never even heard of Ray Roberts before this got announced.
Sure.
And it's just going to be really cool as a local guy to see, you know, part of me is happy that it's flooded, but part of me is kind of sad that it's not, or that it's, you know, not at normal pool. Cause I would love to see, you know, what these guys would do when it's kind of at normal level on this lake to kind of separate themselves from the field. It would just be it, regardless, it's going to be really cool to see what they do. And most of them have zero history on this lake and it's just new water to them. And to me, that is some of my favorite times to fish is when I'm going somewhere new. It's just exciting. It brings me back to why I love fishing. It's a puzzle. You know, it can get really redundant sometimes around here when you've been fishing these lakes for so long and you just get in these little patterns that, when you launch the boat, you know everything you're going to do from minute one to the last minute.
Right.
And it's going to be really fun to watch guys that have spent 3 days on this lake, 4 days on this lake and see what they do. I'm really excited about that. And I think that's one of the cool things about this classic is that it's not a lake that people know, you know, it's just, it's not your Gunnersville. It's not, we don't know what to expect. We really don't know what to expect. And I think that's the most exciting thing about it. And we're getting a summer classic. I'm all about summer classics. Let's just move it to summer. I think it proves most of the time to me, it proves the better angler. I think it's a tougher time of year to fish. And I just, you know, I'm all about the summer classic. Maybe they'll see the turnout from the people vacationing and coming here. I bet this classic is going to be one that more people travel to than have in recent years because it's in the summer and kids aren't in school. You're going to see a lot of kids at this classic and that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Texas High School Bass Association is the biggest. It rivals, if not is bigger than Alabama's high school bass. And all of those guys Matt Tolney with THSBA is one of the best promoters of the sport, and he's going to have all of those high schoolers fired up. And you're going to see so many high school kids. I think they have around 15,000 competing anglers between. There's the East Texas Bass Association, and there's Texas High School Bass Association, and both of those combined, it's something like 15,000 students. It's a massive amount of high school anglers that fish tournaments around here that are almost all going to be at the Classic. It would shock me if they weren't.
Nice. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked for the Summer Classic too. Like, I think it'll be, and like, I don't think there's ever been a June Classic. I think they've always been like August, September.
Yeah.
So I think this could be really interesting, and it's good to see that. And I don't know that it's ever going to shape things up long term, but it'd be cool because, you know, if you ever have June Classics, then there's hope that there's one that goes more geographically open, right? Like, I mean, how cool would it be to see a Champlain Classic or something like that in June, or you know what I mean? Like, that would be nuts.
Oh, man.
But it's also in your back door, more than Ray Roberts is anyway. So yeah. it'd be fun for those Northerners to get to go to something like that. It'd be amazing. There's bound to be venues up there that could host it.
For sure. I mean, it's 50 boats. Like, yeah, that.
More about the Classic. The first...
But that's what I mean. Like, if 50 boats, we've got so much water. Surely you could find a convention center or arena that's close. I mean, like, for 50 boats, right? Like, you don't need a massive lake. So,
yep.
This is the first Classic that I'm going to attend as well. So
nice.
We've had a couple that have been close in Conroe and Grand Lake, and it just never really panned out for me to go. And so I'm like extremely excited to go this weekend. That's why I've been to three corners of Texas today, trying to get all my work done this week. I flew into Harlingen, Texas, in the very southern tip of Texas this morning, and flew to Houston from there this afternoon, then to here in El Paso this evening. So I'm ready. I'm ready.
That's a lovely.
Yeah, sounds like there'd be some, and the expo is always cool, right? We talked about cool things. Sounds like they have limited edition colors of Sweet Beavers.
They've got a good looking one that catches them on a lake around here that they're putting out. I might have to snag some.
Nice. I do not think all past Classic champions should be at the Classic. No, but I do think Mark Jeffries actually brought this up a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week, that they should have a tournament of champions. Like, anybody that's ever won a Classic or Elite Series, like that kind of, that would be cool, but not separate from the Classic.
Yeah, I saw that. I watched that episode, and they talked about another tournament, like a team tournament. They were talking about like putting guys in a boat together and doing like a team style tournament or something. It would be interesting.
Yeah. Just because they're not going to be there doesn't mean they won't have the tackle trap with some exclusive colors. I'm betting the tackle trap will have the exclusive colors. They're pretty tight. sounds like they'll have them online as well. So there you go.
It'll be a great place to pick up some stuff. Definitely don't come expecting to not spend some money, because you're going to get some opportunities to actually bought some of my first Dobbins rods ever at the Bassmaster Classic that year. Nice. At Grand Lake. I bought a 735 Champion XP. And it was the graphite rod, and it was a stout flipping rod. It was actually maybe my first flipping rod, like intentional flipping rod. And it stayed in my arsenal for a long time. I got rid of it a couple years ago.
Is it the 736?
It was 730. It was old. I mean, it was several years ago.
Sure.
But it could have been 736.
735 is my all-time go-to frog rod. I went away from it for a little bit. I bought one, I think it was maybe last year, and I don't know why I ever went away from it. That is like the greatest frogging rod.
A lot of people like the 736, but I liked the little more tip in a 735 for the tactical frogging anyways.
Yeah, a lot of the frogging we do around here is more open water, under bushes. Yeah. It's not matted grass. For matted grass, 736 all day.
I bump up to the 795 instead in the mats.
Or the 766 is what I'm thinking. 766.
That thing is a broomstick. Nathan, mainly Bassmaster.com, but also FS1. But I think if you're watching FS1 in Canada, you'll get different programming. So you can check it out on Bassmaster.com Friday, Saturday, Sunday, if you're interested. And you should have no problem seeing it on Bassmaster.com even in Canada.
Yeah, since this is a YouTube live stream, I don't feel bad saying it. I'm a cheapskate, and I don't have any actual TV subscriptions. Like, I don't have any cable subscriptions at all. If you download the app, you get a free hour. And after that hour is up on FS1, the Fox Sports app, you can delete the app and re-download it and watch another hour for free. So just a little tip for those of you who don't have sports subscriptions.
That's interesting because, like, I tried to go through the browser, and you get a free hour on the browser, but I couldn't figure out a way to shake that. Like, I watched a browser. I, like, watched an hour on my computer, and I tried to go to my phone, and it was like, nope, you already used your hour. Even, like, with the Wi-Fi. Apple
thing. You may not be able to do it with your Androids over there, but it could just be an Apple deal. I don't know. But give it a try. If you just have to have that FS1 live action, that's a good way to do it.
It is pretty buttery. Those cameras look really good on FS1.
As much as I like Ronnie Moore, I much rather listen to Mark Zona and Tom Sanders.
Yeah.
So Ron.
Justin Kerr is a hammer. We actually shared a stretch at Pickwick where he qualified. So we had a lot of the same water on Pickwick when he made it to the Classic.
Nice. One of these days I'll make it up there and fish some of those lakes up there. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but I'm also a cord cutter. Right at the beginning of COVID, I was like, we're done. All my kids watch Netflix and YouTube. We don't need cable or anything like that. So,
all we have is Netflix and Disney Plus.
Yeah, I think we have Disney Plus too.
We don't have Netflix anymore. We got to run Netflix. Or Hulu. Hulu and Disney Plus. That's all we got. Yeah.
All right, here you go. Android phone. Do you download TV Mod? I'm writing this one down. I'm gonna check this out.
What's an Android phone?
The superior device.
Well done, thank you. Need to sting him a little bit from our pre-live stream conversation.
It's a device that actually allows you to freedom to do things that you can't on your overly restricted device.
Oh, except for, like, I don't know. I'm not a device guy. You're right. iPhone is super easy to use, and that's why I like it. So
it's for simple people like Koi
and me.
You know, that's
keep
fine.
It simple. I like the kiss method.
Cool. All right. Well, you know what, guys? We're at 2 hours and 10 minutes. At least Koi and I are. So I think we're at a good spot. We covered things. If you guys came late, the replay will be up on YouTube and Facebook. Thanks for everybody that tuned in. Also, tomorrow morning, I'll upload the audio version on podcast. So if you want to listen to it while you're flying around, Kevin, back and forth to airports or exercising or driving to the expo, you can just search Hella Bass on your favorite podcast app, and you can catch this replay and a whole bunch of other ones. So thank you guys for coming on. Nice to meet you, Kevin.
Yeah, me too, man. Thanks for having me on.
If you guys ever make it up to Minnesota, hit me up. I'll show you what some good fishing is. And thanks, guys. I think we're all excited to watch some fishing this weekend, although I might go out fishing instead. This is the one downside to June. Like, when it's February and March Classics, I ain't got nothing to do because ice is frozen. Like, I'm like tuned in. But this weekend, I'm probably going to go fishing and miss some of the live coverage. So,
hey, just do what I do and throw your Android or iPhone on the front deck and just let it roll.
Yeah.
A lot of days on the water with Koi where we have the Bass Live on the phone listening to it while we're fishing.
Yeah, so very cool. All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. If you guys want to just remember, we're here to help you guys catch more big bass and suck less.
As always, thanks to all of you that hung in till the end of this podcast. This has been another episode of Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast Experience. Please consider sharing this with any of your bass and buddies and friends. This is the best way for podcasts to grow is through word of mouth. Also, don't forget to search Hellebass on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or just about anywhere else so that we can connect in more ways. As always, here to help you catch more bass and suck less.